This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. A year after Charlotte City Council narrowly rejected a controversial proposal to expand the city's non-discrimination ordinance, our newly elected mayor, Jennifer Roberts, wants the council to take the matter up again. The proposal would have broadened the current city's ordinances list of protected characteristics to include sexual orientation and gender identity, among others. But the uproar quickly focused, as it has in other parts of the country, on the use of public restrooms by transgendered people. We're going to hear from people on both sides of this issue this hour, but we're going to start the discussion with a recap of the issue itself and what happened last year as the council debated it. WFAE reporter Tom Bullock was in the thick of it, and he joins us now. Good morning and welcome back.
Thanks, Mike.
So take us back to last March when this was discussed by City Council, and why did it come up at that time? What was the reason? What was the timing of this?
Well, it wasn't a specific thing for the timing. It was basically that City Council or a number of people on the City Council had been hearing proposals to expand the non-discrimination ordinance to include, as you said, expanded protections for LGBT individuals. Mm-hmm. And they've been listening to a couple of meetings. They decided to go for a vote. And that evening was probably one of the most contentious meetings I've seen, not just in Charlotte, but anywhere. To set the stage, outside of Government Center, you had hundreds of people protesting. At times, I was listening actually back to our report this morning, and I was covering inside. One of our reporters, Gwendolyn Glenn, was covering the protests outside, and she used this line, which I think is very – it was perfect, frankly. It had the feeling of a church service at times. There were Bible verses being quoted. There were people that were preaching this idea that, God is infallible and God has created two sexes, and those two sexes, those independent sexes, need to be respected. We were very angry. They were obviously against this expansion. Inside, you saw more of a mix of both those for and those against, and that meeting went on well past, I believe it was past midnight. More than 100 people spoke, each given 2 minutes to express their views, and you heard a litany of for and against. Everything, again, going back from Bible. Basically, you saw the culture war that is this issue summarized by individuals at, 2 minute increments. And it was a really interesting meeting.
It's my impression, and it could be inaccurate, that the whole thing got bogged down in the bathroom issue. Is that in fact what most of the debate was about? Most of the people pro and con who got up to speak, was that what it was about, or was it about the whole panoply of the issue?
Well, I hate to boil it down to just the bathroom issue when it comes to, again, more than 100 people speaking. But that was the crux of the argument that night, specifically for the city council. Because when the speakers were done, and a lot of people from both sides did bring up bathrooms. You had parents who were saying that they were afraid that this would lead to the potential for, molestations in restrooms. You had transgendered individuals who said that they fear going into the restroom of their choice because of, the chance that they could be accosted or physically assaulted. And when you finally got from the podiums where people have been speaking down to the city council vote itself, the very first thing that happened was Councilwoman Vi Lyles introduced an amendment to the proposal that would not have included bathrooms, that would basically have let this just be about protections when it comes to customers, which is really what this bill would do. It makes it so taxi drivers, Uber drivers, anybody who is a ride for hire cannot discriminate, that businesses cannot discriminate against customers. It doesn't include hiring practices or things like that. It really is just based on the consumers. When it finally came down to that, she put out this amendment that says, okay, we're going to take bathrooms out of it. And the council pretty much at that point was done, and the vote was 6-5 against passing the ordinance. And what was really fascinating is you had Councilwoman Luana Mayfield, who was openly gay, voting against the measure because she said, I think very powerfully, she said, I'm not going to vote for a second-class status for any citizen. Mm-hmm. And for her to vote against it really kind of stopped people. That's why I say it was powerful because, she obviously is one of the biggest proponents for it. And she said, this just isn't good enough in her mind.
So had this passed, it would have impacted businesses in terms of the customers they then would have to serve. Mm-hmm. It would have impacted people who provide rides like Uber and taxi services in people that have to serve. How would it have changed government?
Well, that's something that we didn't really find out much about until later. And that's when you have city manager Ron Carley, who basically came out and said, we already have this policy as an acting policy right now in city buildings. So officially, a transgender person will fall back on what is the crux, again, of the argument, the bathroom issue. It's already city policy that people can use the bathroom of their choice in city buildings. And what was interesting is that is not widely known, or at least it wasn't until that was reported. And you actually had at the meeting a Democratic operative who is herself a transgendered woman. She went to the restroom, and there were police that were called. And it turned into really a bit of a scene there, because it was actually kind of, you know, depending on your view of this very complicated issue, it you can use it as part of your argument.
So this ordinance would add, and nothing has changed.
That's correct.
If they take this up again.
That's correct.
No wording has changed. It's the same ordinance.
It is the same ordinance.
This would add a marital status, familial status, sexual orientation, gender identity, and gender expression to that list. Let's talk about those last two items, gender identity and gender expression. How are they defined? What are they talking about?
Well, this again comes back to this idea of what defines your gender. And there are two arguments here, and I know from both of our guests that you'll hear a lot about this. There is one school of thought that says that gender is biological, and that's it. So you are either A or you are B. It is a binary biological fact. You have another school of thought, another argument that says that gender is actually in your mind. It's a state of thought. It is a state of identity, and that you are not defined by body parts as much as your personality, your persona, your mind defines it as much as anything. Expression, that's a little bit more of a complicated issue. It's how you choose to be. So you may choose at the moment, in theory, and I know Chris can probably correct this if I say this wrong, but you can, you know, at one moment you could be You could choose to express yourself as a female, Mike, or you could choose to express yourself as a male. Mm-hmm. It is less of an all-encompassing I am A or B. It allows it to be a little bit more fungible.
Bill and Matthews is writing in, how is the term transgender being defined? Does it refer to people who have had medical assistance to match their gender identity? Does it also include cross-dressers? What percentage of the population are we talking about? So do you have to go through the surgery to be transgender, or is it simply that you are expressing yourself as a male or a female by wearing clothes of the gender with which you identify?
It's more the latter in this sense of the ordinance. The city does not choose to define exactly what that means. And let's not forget that in the transgender community, you have different stages. Not everybody will go through reassignment surgery. Not every person has the means to do that.
Right.
So it's not, the city doesn't look at it in terms of, again, that A or B decision, that biological binary decision. They look at it in terms of your own personal view of yourself.
This discussion has been held in other cities. In Houston, Texas, they debated a similar ordinance, and it too was shot down. And both that debate and the one here ultimately focused on the use of bathrooms, which bathrooms transgendered people would be allowed to use. Did the focus that it ultimately, the ultimate focus of this, did that surprise supporters of this ordinance, that it would come down to bathrooms?
I think that's a question for Chris. I think that's actually something we have a supporter. I think that's a better question for somebody who's come out fully in support.
Are there cities where similar ordinances have passed or currently have protections for transgendered people on the books?
Yes, absolutely there are. And I don't have the list in front of me of exactly what those cities are, but that has passed. San Francisco is the most obvious of those. And it is important to note that in these cities, there are no criminal an increase in crime against children or anyone else actually in restrooms. That is actually a statistical fact.
People have studied it.
Yeah.
Okay. In August of last year, the Observer conducted a poll which found 51% of the respondents supported an expansion of the non-discrimination ordinance to include gays, lesbians, and transgender people. Can we infer from that the respondents who favor those protections are okay with having transgendered people use the bathroom of the gender with which they identify?
I am not willing to go that far for a simple reason. Polls are tricky. Mm-hmm. And with polls, you have a snapshot. Without basically being able to see past the top sheet of any poll to see how the questions are asked, to see exactly the methodology. I'm personally, I'm a political reporter. I've covered polls. I've actually done a Charlotte Talks on why polls can be deceiving. I'm not saying that this one is. But I think what people need to remember is that a poll is nothing more than a snapshot of public opinion reached by the surveyors at that moment in time.
And there's a margin of error on all polls.
Absolutely.
And 51% is – that would give you a slim margin of error, and that would give you a – it could easily be 48% in favor or 47% in favor.
That's right. And what's also interesting is this is coming after a year. Mm-hmm. Now, that city council meeting in March, again, was incredibly polarized. Whether or not the city is still polarized on that issue is not known. But one thing that is clear is the city council is not the same as it was in March of 2015. And that is largely due to two people being gone. One is Michael Barnes, the other is David Howard. Both ran for mayor unsuccessfully. And to do that in Charlotte, they had to give up their city council seats. Now, those two, especially Michael Barnes, was really more of a centrist Democrat. On social issues, you could say that he actually crossed the political Rubicon, as it were, and was a little bit more conservative than other members. They are not there anymore. So the city council, it is easily argued, is actually finding itself now to be more liberal than it was in 2015. And that's really what this boils down to.
Now, this meeting tonight is not a council meeting.
That's right.
It is a community I'm trying to think of the name of the organization, the Community Relations
Outreach
Committee.
Yep.
Val wants to know, she's interested in going, what the time and location of the meeting is, and we'll talk about that in a second. But the meeting tonight is organized, here it is, organized by the Community Building Initiative and the Community Relations Committee at the request of Mayor Roberts.
That's correct.
What's the purpose of the meeting if it's not a council meeting?
This is fascinating, and I'm not going to pretend. This is a very different kind of meeting, and I'm going to go, and we'll have a report on this tomorrow morning. I'm curious. I'm going in with an open mind, but I got to tell you, this sounds a little – it potentially could be a little hokey. Here's what's going to happen. After all of those speakers, the ones we've been talking about so far on the show, the city council, through this outreach program, is is not having people speak their
actors.
Minds. They're having actors. They're paying for four actors to come in and each to do a particular vignette. And the vignettes will basically break down to a business owner in support of the expansion, a business owner against the expansion, a transgendered person who is arguing for the expansion, and a parent who is afraid to have their children go into a restroom if the expansion goes through.
Have they said why they're using actors as opposed to real people who may be
and there
holding
is
those
positions?
And there is
plenty of people who want to speak on this issue. I actually spoke with Willie Ratchford, who's in charge of the folks who are putting it on, and asked him specifically that because it seems like an odd way to go. And he said the thought is by having actors use those speeches from last year as source material that it will create some kind of safe space for people to talk. It will take away a stigma of someone going up and saying outright that this is what I think, and it's having a representation of that view.
Because listeners in the audience are going to realize these are not real people with real opinions. These are actors reading from a script, and that would diffuse the situation some?
That's basically the thought process. Now, the question to me is, and why I'm going in with an open mind but a little skeptical, is this is community outreach. This is a very complicated issue. This is something that is very polarizing at times. So is it really – shouldn't it be more effective to have people actually express their own views, to get them to actually speak to each other about how they feel? And this meeting may accomplish that. It may not.
This is the first of several. When is it and where is it?
I'm going to have to go back and get the address. It's at 6:30 tonight, though.
Okay. We'll come back with more of that, and we'll actually hear from real people, not actors, on both sides of this issue when we come back at Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the Bank of the Ozarks, Charlotte's trust and wealth management team led by Lorraine Eason, who has a commitment to a higher level of personal service. Details at bankozarks.com. In Charlotte, we are, I think it's safe to say, flooded with craft beer. Actually, the craft beer revolution has taken off all over the country. The number of breweries and the sales of craft beer have doubled nationwide. But here, local brewers say that their growth is being hampered by an antiquated state law that requires them to contract out their distribution once they reach certain levels of production. We're going to find out what that means, what the implications of that are, and about craft beer's growing pains in general on this program tomorrow morning at 9. Bring your own growler.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, the Obama administration announces new rules for companies aimed at closing the gender pay gap. At the same time, equal pay advocates are introducing legislation in at least 24 states. What this could mean for women, businesses, and wages.
Join the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Tom Bullock from WFAE News is with us. Quite clearly, there are two distinct and entrenched sides in this debate over non-discrimination ordinances that the City Council has been looking at, or an ordinance that the City Council has been looking at. We're going to hear from both sides for the remainder of the hour, not actors, real people who have their own opinions on this. Joining us in our Spirit Square studio is Representative Dan Bishop, a Republican from North Carolina House District 104 in Mecklenburg County, who, by the way, is running for Senate, the Bob Russo seat in the Senate. Is that correct?
It's correct. Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Thank
and
you.
With us by phone is Chris Skro, Executive Director of the Raleigh-based organization Equality NC, which is dedicated to securing equal rights and justice for LGBTQ North Carolinians. Chris, welcome back.
Good morning.
Representative Bishop, let me start with you. You have criticized this proposed ordinance expansion as divisive and radical and being pushed by whack job extremists. Those are your words. Isn't that language itself divisive?
Sure it is. I guess that's right. But I, to the point, though, Tom's report makes that he used the word polarized. He cited the 51% that one can say in any event indicates there's very as close a divided public as you could have. When we did our non-discrimination ordinance almost 47 years ago in 1968, there was a time of consensus. In which overwhelmingly people, now there wasn't that there was no disagreement at all, but there was an overwhelming consensus in support of what was done. And that's the way Charlotte has effectively moved forward. This is different.
But people say that ordinance was late in happening.
Well, so they can say. My view is, and this is the question that I posed. Now, you say we're entrenched sides. I wasn't a participant in the last debate. I watched it from Raleigh while we were in session. And so the question that I raised is, why would this be the very top of the priority list of new council and the mayor when the community is as deeply divided over it as they are? There are, as Tom also puts it, two schools of thought. And what this law does, and I understand I'm a lawyer, but a long time before I was in politics, and that's how I come at it. And there are a lot of things about this from a legal point of view that strike me as remarkable. But what you're doing is you are outlawing one of those schools of thought, in effect. You are saying no one who is very broadly defined running a public accommodation means any business at all, any retailer, any public building, no one is entitled to take the view or act on the view any longer that men should go to the men's room, women should go to the women's room.
Couldn't the same be said of the last ordinance that you referred to a moment ago? I mean, I'm sure that was about civil rights, and it was about drinking fountains and restrooms and sitting at lunch counters. Didn't we outlaw the other point of view?
I think we did. And here's the distinction that I would draw. There are several, but here's one. In fact, if I were African American, it would be most deeply insulting to me to equivalate this with the experience, the American experience that African Americans have suffered, did suffer for more than 200 years. So a legacy of slavery and a legacy of more than 100 years after that of Jim Crow law, that was a different and unique circumstance.
I would imagine, Chris, that you see it differently. Can a comparison be made to that? Could it be said that African Americans were certainly second-class citizens, if that, during Jim Crow, and certainly during slavery they weren't citizens at all? Could it be said that LGBTQ folks are also second-class citizens?
Yeah, I think that it can be said. I'm not going to deign to speak for the African American community because I'm not, and I think that direct comparisons aren't always the best, but I will say that our community does face discrimination. And public accommodations, such as restaurants and hotels. I think there's a reasonable expectation that the public has, and that my father-in-law is a small business owner. I think that he, as a small business owner, has a reasonable expectation that when he opens his door to the public, that he opens it to all of the public. So there certainly is a comparison to be made. There is a civil rights battle going on behalf of gay and transgender people and Charlottesians. And as you pointed out, 47 years is a long time to not look at updating city code to be inclusive. You know, you talked earlier about the fact that San Francisco protects its citizens against this kind of discrimination. So does Charleston, South Carolina, Myrtle Beach, Columbia, South Carolina, and every other city except for Jacksonville, Florida, of the size of Charlotte. So we're not just talking about the liberal left coast. We're talking about the upstate South Carolina, and we're talking about every city in the country that wants to remain competitive that is the same size as Charlotte.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Correct.
Time to have these protections.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but hasn't Bessemer City and Greensboro and Raleigh and Winston-Salem passed similar ordinances, or are they substantially different?
I don't know about Bessemer City.
I don't know what the Bessemer City ordinance looks like. Greensboro has a comprehensive non-discrimination protection that protects against housing. City of Raleigh does on a couple of different bases. So there are a couple of different ordinances that have been passed across the state that I know Representative Bishop has already said in his Senate campaign he's interested in coming after their municipal authority to do so as a political toy, however unpopular that is. There are places around the state that do have these protections.
That's not accurate. What I've said is that cities and look, there are a couple of inaccuracies. Raleigh's non-discrimination ordinance always has been different than Charlotte's. It doesn't have any force of law. It expresses a policy, their notion that we shouldn't have discrimination. I'm not aware that Raleigh's modified theirs. Perhaps they have. Greensboro did last January, and to my knowledge, that's it. I don't think Winston-Salem has done it. I'm not aware of the Bessemer City one.
Has been the outcome of Greensboro passing similar ordinance?
There hasn't been a lot of attention to it up there. I'm told that the city attorney's position is that it has not come into effect because it hasn't been blessed by HUD, and that gets into some detail that is probably more than you want to hear, but I understand it's not effective yet.
More than 200 cities and counties have enacted laws that prohibit discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity. More than 500 private businesses have adopted similar policies, including 61% of Fortune 500 companies. Clearly, that must mean that these companies see this as good for business at the least, and at best, morally right. So if it's good for business and you're a Republican, why wouldn't it be good for the city of Charlotte?
Well, doesn't that beg the question what the need is? What is the need for the force of law to require folks to serve or employ? And employment's not a part of this, and I think that's primarily what you're referring to with big businesses or all businesses. But they're already welcoming people of a different sexual orientation and different gender identities. Why must it be forced on those, if there are some other school of thought, a minority school of thought perhaps at this time from Tom's, that has perhaps bases that are important to them based on their faith, based on their instincts about what's appropriate for men and women to do in restrooms and showers, to believe differently about it? Why must that be forced?
Chris?
There actually was a community survey that was completed in the city of Charlotte after the ordinance vote last time that showed that a majority of gay and transgender Charlotteans had faced discrimination at some point in seeking public accommodations. Now, we believe that is a handful of members of the business community or whatnot who would discriminate because, as you've said, the vast majority of small and large businesses are really looking to be welcoming. So the need is twofold. One, the discrimination is real. I don't think that anyone in the LGBT community would say that it is necessarily easy to be out and comfortable. And certainly anything that cities can do to make stated steps to be more welcoming is important. And the other piece that you've mentioned is the business community itself. There's a reason why most of Fortune 500 companies not only have pro-LGBT protections in their company policies, but also do things like make sure that they invest in the LGBT community and attend Pride events. It's because they understand that in order to be competitive, in order for the city of Charlotte to be competitive, and in order for the state of North Carolina to be competitive, that they need to show that they are open and inclusive and welcoming. And none of those present any problems to people like Representative Bishop, who maybe don't think that being gay or transgender is okay. They just say that we are welcoming and inclusive to all. He's welcome to his private viewpoint about whatever he wants to think, but he's not welcome to openly discriminate in places that should be open to all, and that includes restaurants and bars and public facilities and vehicles for hire, certainly.
So it's all right, though, with Mr. Scrow and the advocates for this to discriminate against people who have a different view. In other words, this law puts government on the side of one versus another. If you look at the movement, generally speaking, they've won the right to marriage by a decree of the Supreme Court last year. They've become equal in the eyes of the law, but now they want to create a disequilibrium. They want to say their view is right, or you can hold that point of view, provided you're prepared to be banished
but we
from
have
business.
You're the lawyer here. I'm not. We have precedent for this. You cannot, as a restaurant owner, when a black person walks into your restaurant, say, no, I'm not going to serve you because you're black. So we have precedent, do we not?
We do.
Why is it that a transgendered person could walk into a restaurant and service could be refused because of their transgender?
Lots of reasons. I've already differentiated them on the point of view that of the history is entirely different. It's not an immutable characteristic. We're talking about dispensing with an immutable characteristic, sex, biologically based sex, to go instead in favor of something that is not, you know, Tom mentioned earlier, or you asked the question, how are these defined in the ordinance? They're not defined in the ordinance, mm-hmm. What gender identity is. And it's important to think about this. What's the difference between gender identity and gender expression? Since both become protected classes, you're talking about, let's say, okay, so you've got someone who is of one biological gender. They identify for whatever, so you say, you assume that whatever they report about that is genuine and appropriate. Then you go beyond that and you say, even if they don't identify as a particular gender different than their gender, but they choose to express themselves for some reason, then you invest them with these rights. If the distinction, you know, it almost is so obvious that it's hard to articulate
Would you agree that this is more complicated, and I don't mean this as a pun, than things being simply black or white?
I think that public policy is always complicated, and I appreciate the opportunity to have complicated conversations. I'm afraid that Representative Bishop really is not looking at this as a complicated issue, that it's a very simple political issue there. And you just heard him explain the state of the movement in terms of the legal equality that the LGBT community has gained over the last couple of years. And I think that that makes it clear that the concern is not really the concern today is stated about transgender people being able to use the restroom of the gender with which they identify, which we've not had a recorded problem with anywhere in the country. Yesterday was marriage equality.
Before that,
it was employment discrimination. So my concern is that this really isn't about this particular issue. That this is the stand-in for why are people who are on the extreme conservative side, concerned about gay or transgender people today. And this is just the flavor of the week for them to stand up against our rights.
Matt on Twitter writes, stop playing LGBT and black people against each other. Discrimination can be different for different groups. It's still discrimination.
Well, perhaps so. It's interesting. In citing evidence of discrimination, Chris said that people have been exposed to ill treatment. One thing that if you want to go back in history to what African Americans were subjected to, they were utterly separated from economic life in America. That's not the case here. The purpose of non-discrimination policy, where you've outlawed race discrimination, for example, was never to say we're going to impose on society a sufficient thought regulation that no one's ever going to be offended. No one's ever going to be insulted by someone who's boorish. No one's ever going to be rejected. That's not the point. The point is we wouldn't permit people to be cut off from economic life. So you may have – these folks will be cited by Chris as having experienced some incident of discrimination. But the question is, are they precluded from the availability of services in Charlotte?
Well,
can anyone point to that circumstance?
According to the –
let me unpack that point
all right, Chris.
A little bit. So is the claim that you getting – you being refused service in a restaurant if you're LGBT somehow not cutting you off from economic life at that restaurant?
Not as long as you can go next door to another restaurant
well,
where
according,
you'd be accepted.
According to the Human Rights Campaign, transgender people experience unusually high rates of discrimination. 47% have experienced an adverse job outcome, such as being fired or not being hired or being denied a promotion. And as a result, they sometimes find it difficult to make ends meet because they can't get a job. That would be an argument for being cut off from economic prosperity. They are all taxpayers.
If it were so, to that point, you're saying they're lying. No, I'm not saying they're lying. The distinction, whether they face pervasive discrimination such that they're unable to get a job. Not that if the one place they go in and find a place where someone treats them badly, where someone acts like an obnoxious slob and says, "I don't care to hire you because of that." Actually, most of the folks that I would identify with wouldn't take such a position. But the fact that they may have encountered it once somewhere doesn't mean that they haven't been able to get employment. The fact that they've gone to someone who has a room in the back of their house that they don't want to let to a person other than a married couple in the way they see marriage doesn't mean that they can't go to any of a thousand other places and obtain housing. It's a solution in search of a problem.
For discrimination, is it if black people or gay people or transgender people can't gain access to 25% or 50% or 75% of public accommodations? At what point does it become not just a nuisance and become actual hampering of their ability to access economic? I think that you're really talking in some dangerous language here.
Wow. Well, I see lots of danger. I mean, the danger that I see is Jennifer Roberts used the phrase all the time that discrimination is never right. Well, the problem is that you're discriminating against people you're just not paying attention to. So if you take, for example, that bathroom issue that was so critical for those folks who could have had an ordinance last year but declined to on that issue, they wanted to make it rise or fall on whether a transgender person, someone who is of one gender but identifies as the other, can go into a bathroom of the other sex. Well, you disregard the discomfort that that many folks who are of that gender may feel. They get ruled out.
Like the debate last March, it has to come down to the bathroom issue, which we will get into here with Representative Dan Bishop from the 104th District in Mecklenburg County and Chris Scrow, who is the Executive Director of Equality North Carolina, when we come back. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and High Point University, a liberal arts-based institution providing students a college experience grounded in holistic education, experiential learning, and values-based living. Details at highpoint.edu. The Obama administration announces new rules for companies aimed at closing the gender pay gap. At the same time, equal pay advocates are introducing legislation in at least 24 states. What this could mean for women, businesses, and wages, the topic of the conversation coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on the Diane Rehm Show. You know what we're talking about, and if you'd like to get in on the conversation, now's your shot. You can email us at charlottetalks@wfae.org or search for WFAE on Facebook or Twitter. We're coming back in just a second.
It's your world. We help you explore it.
Italian lawmakers are debating a proposal to allow civil unions. That's considered a step forward for gay and lesbian couples.
It's your community. We help you understand it.
But it was teamwork that ultimately sent the Panthers to Super Bowl 50, said tight end Greg Olsen.
We're the epitome. We're an example of what it takes.
Morning Edition on WFAE is an essential way to start your day and stay connected to your world. Listen weekday mornings from 5 to 9 on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. There's a meeting tonight that is being put on by, not by the city council, but by help me out here, Tom. I can never remember.
Charlotte-Mecklenburg Community Outreach.
And Community Building Initiative, yep. Et cetera. At the behest of Mayor Jennifer Roberts, it will be at 2601 East 7th Street. That's the Palmer Building, and that will be at 6:30 tonight. Last March, when the City Council took this up and decided and defeated it, and they're taking it up again, and the wording has not changed, but last March, as this conversation has continually pointed to, the conversation then devolved into a situation where it was all about bathrooms and transgendered use of bathrooms. If those provisions were removed, would there be as much controversy over this?
I do think there would be. And I know it probably sounds strange for someone to say that, but I do. And I do think that this is not just a bathroom bill. I think that is an easy thing for both sides to hang their hats on. It's a visible, easy to understand argument that they can make with something that we're all familiar with. But at the heart of this argument, at the heart of both Chris and Dan's arguments here, and I've just been sitting back listening, is this concept of discrimination. Mm-hmm. And that's really what this can boil down to. So yes, I do believe it would be as adamant an argument. And this is also why I think regardless of what the city council does, this is going to continue in court. But this does come down to an ethical, a moral, a discrimination-based argument. And my job here is the easy one. I am the person who is not supposed to take a side. It really comes down to what Charlotte wants to be when it comes to who they see as being discriminated in this particular instance.
That's Tom Bullock from WFAE News. Representative Dan Bishop is with us, Republican from the North Carolina 104th District in Mecklenburg County, and Chris Scrow, Executive Director of Equality North Carolina. We've been asking our question on social media, does Charlotte need to expand its non-discrimination ordinance to include sexual orientation and gender identity? Why or why not? And we're getting plenty of response to that question as we go through the hour. Aaron on Facebook, please explain, what does being female or being male feel like? Because putting a dress on doesn't make one a woman. Isn't the definition of what women and men should act and dress like defined by society more so than nature? And that sounds like a question for Chris.
I don't think that I don't think that I want to get into assessing what another person believes their gender to be. But I do know quite a few transgender people, and I will tell you that to go through the adversity that members of the transgender community face in order to come out or be public, people would not do that unless there was something innate there that really said to them, you know what, I was born one biological sex. But really, that was what was assigned to me, and that's not what I feel. I'm sure to unpack this a little bit. Everybody who's talking right now, we're all male, from what I can tell in this conversation. But I'm sure everybody experiences a range of masculinity or femininity, and so I really think that it's important that members of the transgender community be able to have access to restaurants and hotels and public facilities of the gender with which they identify. And there's never been a problem with that anywhere in the country where we protect. And that's really what this is about.
Jeremy on Facebook writes, has an interesting question. Why isn't the ordinance being expanded to also outlaw workplace discrimination against LGBTQ people? This outlaws discrimination of the customers mm-hmm. of these businesses, but the businesses themselves can still choose not to hire or to fire somebody because they are in that category.
Well, that gets into the heart of the other thing that I've said about this, which is it's pretty clear the city doesn't have the authority to do what they plan to do. The reason they haven't done that, the reason they're not doing employment, is because there's a North Carolina Supreme Court case on an ordinance, a non-discrimination employment ordinance that Orange County passed a long time ago, 1995. It was invalidated in 2003 because they didn't have the authority to do it.
That's incorrect. It was invalidated because it enforced criminal instead of civil penalties. That is the crux of that ruling.
You're totally wrong. With all respect, you're completely incorrect. In any event, if I can just finish what I was saying. What the case decided, Williams versus Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, is that the city didn't have, or the county in that case, they have parallel powers, didn't have the authority for that ordinance. By the same token, Charlotte's charter has a provision in it that permits the city to regulate race, creed, national origin, religion discrimination in housing. It's specific. And Chris and the $30 million a year human rights campaign organization wanted the city also to change that. And the city attorney said, no, that's specific. We can't do that. So they're relying.
The city does already have protections for public employees, as does Mecklenburg County.
Right. I was the housing discrimination ordinance. And really what I'm concerned about is not so much how Charlotte sets its own policies about how it's going to hire and treat employees, about how it's going to deal with contractors. I'm concerned about imposing by law a particular school of thought on members of the public who may very reasonably disagree with that one school of thought.
You predict.
Really, because it sounds like you're concerned with municipalities being able to set their own protections when you don't like those protections.
Well,
and you want to come and reach in from Raleigh in the course of your Senate race.
You know, I am concerned that cities do what cities do in North Carolina. North Carolina, and you hear this a lot, the Observer constantly says that the General Assembly is meddling in local affairs. But what's happening, I mean, this is extraordinary. The non-discrimination ordinance that Charlotte passed in 1968 echoed existing federal law, Title II of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. They said the same thing. Now, they did broaden public accommodations, the businesses to whom it would apply, slightly, but it was an echo of existing federal law. This is the first time that any city, other than Greensboro in last January, it's the first time that a city has attempted to go and create social policy of that sort.
What's wrong with them?
They don't have the authority to do it. In North Carolina, cities have the authority that is given them by the General Assembly. And the General Assembly, there's no law in which the General Assembly has said to cities, you may regulate discrimination.
And you have predicted that if passed, the ordinance will be struck down by a court or by the legislature because it exceeds the city council's legal authority. You say the General Assembly has not authorized city councils to legislate non-discrimination mandates except in housing and in a manner consistent with federal law. So are you saying that if this passes, that the legislature will take action against the city of Charlotte to reverse it?
Let me add one thing first. Not only do they not have authority, if they pass this, they're going to be contravening two state laws. One is the North Carolina Building Code, which mandates that in every non-residential building, there be bathrooms. They specify the number of bathrooms based on the occupant load, that they be separated by sex, and that they be designated for the sex to which they're specified.
So
that's one. It also will violate, because the literal language of the statute will require transgender folks, even who haven't had sex change surgery, to be admitted into gang showers, into showers where people shower together. And that will violate North Carolina's criminal law on indecent exposure. One thing a city cannot do is to contravene or conflict state law. So it's an invalid ordinance, and that was another point that I made. Why do this division, particularly when they lack the authority to get it done?
I'll let you respond to that in a second, Chris. Tom?
I do want to point out two things here that I think are important for clarity. Number one, I understand that you're a lawyer and obviously a member of the General Assembly. This is a Dillon rule state, full on. I understand the implications of that, but cities do have the ability to pass ordinances without any law mandating that they can do that. The power of the legislature in this sense is to say, you're wrong in doing that. You can't do that. We will overturn you. With the bathrooms, also, in fairness, the law is not that specific. If it was that every bathroom has to have a, you know, a picture of a man or a picture of a woman on it, then unisex or family bathrooms would be outlawed under that interpretation of North Carolina law. That's obviously not the case. I just want to throw that out there that, yes, the state, the legislature does have the ability to overturn laws, but these by themselves, the city still can pass ordinances that don't have a law that supports necessarily that action. There's some. It's like the Constitution. There's a broader range of.
You're sort of right, and you're sort of wrong. cities have under two statutes.
I'm going to jump in here.
They have.
You want to talk about superseding guidance? EEOC and OSHA at the federal level have said that this is already the case. That you already have to be able to provide access to restrooms for transgender people in a safe and secure way. So
the Obama administration has said that, but that issue is being litigated, as you know, in the Fourth Circuit and in the Third Circuit.
There are several levels of guidance here, and my concern for you as somebody who I would assume identifies as a small government conservative is that a lot of people, and PPP actually found this in a recent poll, a lot of people would rather have their municipalities be able to decide these issues for them than a group of folks in Raleigh. So you just expressed concern over people at the municipal level, the much closer to the ground level of government than Raleigh, passing laws that went against the will of some percentage of the people.
In Illinois, a transgendered high school student undergoing hormone therapy has a passport identifying herself as female. She asked to change clothes in the girls' locker room, and the school district there refused, citing privacy concerns, and sent her to a separate room down the hall. Well, she and her family brought a civil rights complaint against the district, and the U.S. Department of Education intervened, asking the district to give her the right to shower and change in the same locker room with her female peers using a privacy curtain. And evidently that's what's taking place there. So it sounds as though the federal government has already decided this issue.
Well, the Obama administration has. They haven't even done it by passing a rule. They've passed guidance under several different areas of regulation. But the Obama administration has quite a trail of doing things that they don't have the power to do until courts stop them from doing it. So that
don't
issue—
Don't all administrations?
Probably. I mean, certainly one thinks so. Everyone thinks the other one's more outrageous.
Yeah.
But in the point you mentioned in Illinois, it's not the only one. The one I made reference to Chris, and he knows about it, is in Gloucester County, Virginia. There is a litigation ongoing there. The district court held, no, in fact, you cannot. And you know, and it's a significant point because it shows just how extreme the folks in Chris's side are. In the Gloucester County, Virginia case, you had a transgender child who had been accommodated by being provided a neutral restroom, a non-designated restroom to use. And the American Civil Liberties Union brought litigation on I forget which way it was, her behalf, we'll say, to say that wasn't good enough. That was stigmatizing. It was important that that child be admitted to the bathroom of the opposite biological gender. That's being litigated in the Fourth Circuit. And so far, in the district court, that position has lost. So, yeah, I'm not surprised the Obama administration, given the Obama administration's on has joined the side of the ACLU, but it certainly is not the law at this point.
Chris, you've called the uproar over the bathroom provision of this proposed ordinance, a red herring. And you say that this is about protecting trans people who deserve to be safe in bathrooms. The other side would say we deserve to be safe in bathrooms. Do they not? Won't this ordinance, if it were to pass, force the use of bathrooms by people of the opposite gender if they identify as transgendered and allow them to shower in high school locker rooms or college locker rooms if they identify with the opposite gender?
Everybody deserves to be safe in a restroom. Everybody deserves to be safe in public accommodations in general. I think the reason that I called it a red herring is because, and we're talking about members of the gay and transgender community here that lack protection. And really, I want to go back to the heart of this ordinance, which is to prevent discrimination against gay or transgender people in gaining access to public facilities, to a taxi cab or an Uber, to a restaurant or a bar. And whether it's a slim majority when we talk about 51%, and I know that that's just a snapshot in time, or not, we're not talking about extremists Representative Bishop keeps referring to people who hold my point of view on this as extremists and wackos and whatever other incredibly unhelpful commentary he wants to trot out that it has no place in public discourse. So he's calling 51% of Charlatans extremists here, and that's really unfortunate. And
not a chance. If you poll that question, if you poll the question whether people believe that transgenders ought to be admitted to the bathroom of their opposite biological gender, you won't get a 51% approval. I guarantee you.
Well,
look at Houston as your example.
Representative doesn't really give me a lot of comfort that you have your pulse. You have your finger on the pulse of the people of Charlotte or the people of North Carolina.
Quick answer here. In places where this is on the books, where transgendered people can use bathrooms of the opposite gender, have there been problems?
No.
None.
There has not been a single recorded issue. And as Representative Bishop, as an attorney and a legislator, certainly knows, you can't do anything improper. You cannot be a peeping Tom. You cannot be a sexual predator. You cannot be physically violent against somebody in a restroom under current law, because that's illegal.
Another quick answer to a quick question. Representative, answer my earlier question.
Here's an example.
Answer my earlier question about if this passes, will the legislature seek to overturn it?
Well, no.
Will you try to make it overturn it?
I certainly will try to give Charlatans a voice.
Meaning
that they could have a referendum on it the same way it was done in Houston.
Representative Dan Bishop, Republican from the House District number 104 in Mecklenburg County. Chris Stroh, Executive Director of Equality NC, and Tom Bullock, reporter for WFAE News. Thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks.